big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
All right, welcome to RIP. We're here with Lewis Black. Yeah. Insane. Crazy. I don't know how I'm allowed to sit with you, but no, I'll take it.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
I'm such a big fan. Me and my mom, I grew up watching you. My mom's obsessed with you. I think you are actually my mom. It's crazy. But so are you promoting your Rantcast?
I promote it to no avail, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What is that? So you sit down and you talk with, you take in people's rants?
Yeah, I read rants.
Okay.
That come, I've been doing this since 2000. I got 12 maybe even. I started doing it on stage as the end of my show. So for 20 minutes, I'd read rants.
Do you ever read rants that you don't agree with? That you're like, I don't?
Yeah, but they don't really, I don't get a lot of them. And then, but I would occasionally when I was reading them aloud in front of an audience, I would get them. And then I'd, you know, yell about it. But mostly, I don't really get a lot of those. You know, what I get is, and it's not about just, but I mean, it's like, what do you agree with that? I mean, I like chunky peanut butter, and there's people writing in that, you know, they love smooth peanut
right,
butter. I mean,
right.
But raving, but
really?
You know, raging about it.
Yeah.
And, or why did you put a pickle on my fucking plate?
Insane. I want the pickle. You need the pickle.
I believe in the pickle.
You have to believe in the pickle.
But they called it, I don't need a pickle leaving a cum shot on my burger.
Oh.
Wow, imagine that.
That's, I gotcha.
It's pretty good, too.
That
it's
is
pretty,
good.
It's pretty well written. It was, so I started doing that, and then that really worked. And then it was just becoming like two shows. It was like becoming I was doing like 65, 70 minutes, then 20 minutes of this other show, which was a complete change of gears.
Yeah.
And so, and I'd done it for a while, and it was, and we were using some of it, but not really. And then I started doing it as a rant. I started putting it into a rant cast, and because I didn't, you know, that was, I thought, I just really enjoyed reading what people had to say.
Yeah.
Sadly, I was still doing it, but when the pandemic hit, which is about the time I probably wouldn't have wound it down, but I probably wouldn't have dropped it because the stuff that was coming in, the writing was unbelievable.
Really?
It got better and better and
because
better.
People had time to.
Well, no, it was before the pandemic. The pandemic destroyed their writing ability.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because, and I think I saw it in everybody I knew where they were talking or writing more to be sure that people really understood what they were thinking. And people would go a little further on and on and on.
Like there wasn't like a nuance thing. It was just like...
Yeah, the editor was gone.
Why do you think that is?
I think that people, A, were had no communication for quite some time.
Yeah.
And so they were
right.
Speaking into a void. Partly that,
yeah.
And partly I want to be understood. You know, you're inside your own head for that long, and even if some people did end up, you know, we're in, you know, but if you were alone like myself, if you're living by yourself, you went crazy.
Yeah. Did you live alone?
Yeah.
The whole pandemic.
On and off.
Where, in New York or Los Angeles?
Oh, in the fuck Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I don't do well there, so.
I don't do well there either. It's haunted. There's something really awful about it.
Yeah, there is.
I was just there recently. It gave me a full existential crisis.
It's very, especially strange. And, you know, I went, when I started going there, there was at least, I was going there to do what was called pilot season. So
yeah.
You went out there to to audition in January, February. That had a certain, but even then it was, I always felt that, that over those mountains, a dinosaur could appear.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, I just go, yep, I knew it.
Right, totally. It's a different planet. It's so weird. I mean, my problem with it is nobody says what's going on. Like, I just did Netflix as a joke, and I, like, ran into somebody who I know recently, their father died, and I was like, how are you doing? And she was like, really good. I'm so happy to be. And I was like, this is so, in New York, you'd be like, I'm going through a divorce. I have a yeast infection. My dad, you know what I mean? Like, and that's your bodega guy that you're saying that to.
Yeah.
But in LA, nobody is saying what's going on. It's crazy. And then that makes you kind of be like, I'm doing everything good.
Yeah.
It's very weird. And the buildings are all low, which makes me feel weird.
And have you ever been hit by a earthquake there?
No.
Yeah, that really was the final kicker.
You were there in it.
Not a terrible one, but I was literally at my friend's when I was out there for pilot season, and I was standing in the living room. And partly it's not because it made me kind of freeze everything in my head. I was kind of getting up to go to the TV, and he had a big kind of like Turkish Arabian rug.
Yeah.
And it kind of went under me like this. It floated.
Yeah, Aladdin did a little.
It did this kind of like move, boop, and I was like, are you shitting me?
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was really.
And they're just used to it there? How often did that happen?
I don't know. Once is more than enough.
Once is plenty, yeah.
You know?
God, that's so.
And then
weird.
I was there when there was a really a bad one, but I slept through it. And. But I was at a friend's house for a birthday party for one of my friends. He woke up and woke me up to tell me there was an earthquake. I said, I don't need this fucking
there's no way.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
You didn't need to tell me.
Was there shit falling around or anything?
I didn't hear it. There was stuff that fell, but not. But it was a big one about, 100 miles away, but that can really knock shit down in L.A.
Yeah, let you sleep. There's no
reason. Then fires.
Yeah, the fires are scary.
Okay, so I'm driving through, there's the Getty Museum on whatever that 495, 1296, 142, whatever that fucking road is. It goes by the Getty Museum, literally, going to a gig, and there were fires in the valley, et cetera, and maybe 500 yards from the Getty is this blaze. And I'm going.
You can see it?
See it? It was. You could feel it, in part. It was like.
Oh yeah.
It was right there, and then we got to the Residence Inn or something we were staying at. It was us, me doing the show and the group I go out with, and I would record the broadcast and stuff. So I had all these folks, the opening act, a tour manager, and we're the only one. It's us and the first responders
staying at this hotel.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And I'm thinking, what is the matter with this place?
No, it's not habitable. It's not. It should not be that. It's so crazy.
I called a friend, and because I was watching, and they were saying that the fire was coming toward his neighborhood, and he lives just off Sunset.
Yeah.
He and his wife and I. I call him up because, hey, that's not a problem. It's not going to hit us. I said, just stop it. Are you people insane?
Yeah, what is it? That's the whole LA mentality. Yeah. Like, everything's good. It's all fine. Alaska, when I went to Alaska, it's a little bit like that. It's a little bit like everybody's so upbeat and so loving. And then you realize that, 12 of their relatives got eaten by a bear or something. And you're like, oh, yeah, you guys, have to just keep it. Really,
and then they also, a lot of them escape from somewhere else, and that's where they're hiding.
In Alaska?
Yeah,
they're just happy to be free.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So you were alone during the pandemic in New York?
Yeah.
Wow. You don't have a wife?
No. You're supposed to?
Huh?
Are you supposed to?
I think so, yeah. At least for the pandemic.
No.
Just pull it in. No kids, no wife?
No.
Wow. See, I'm 35, so I'm at the point where I have to make the decision about kids or not.
Well, kids, I said no early on.
Really?
Theater. I was not going to, not that, you get married, you have a child, it's going to work itself out. No, it doesn't, you fucking asshole.
Yeah.
I've watched too many lives already.
Yeah, you could.
And not ruined by it, but you don't pursue it because it's the obligation is no longer, it's not just you in the obligation.
And I think that what happens with a lot of women is they have a kid and they fall in love with the kid more than their career, just like biologically.
Yeah.
Where they're like, why am I out on the fucking road when I have a kid? You know what I mean? Like, I could be. So I'm scared of that. I think I would have a kid and just be like, yeah, I'm going to keep bees and watch my kid grow up.
I think you'll find, I think, it says Lewis, but I think that you'll find that, I think it's, you'll go, I want to do that.
I want to do what?
You'll want to have a kid. You'll
really?
Either want to have a kid or you won't want to have a kid.
Yeah.
Okay? The career thing to me was like, I'm not, I also then when I became a comic, I'm going to be on the road 42 weeks a year? That'll be good.
Yeah.
That'll be good for the child. Yeah. The wife's going to be ecstatic. And I know I'm not going to be monogamous at that point, if
right.
that's the deal. So that too. But I think you just reach a point. You go, oh, this was, you'll either find, oh, my career was more important.
Right.
You know?
I know, but it's I'm getting to a little bit of a.
You got a 5 year spread. Here,
5 years?
I think.
It's getting later and later for sure.
People yeah, no, I mean, I wouldn't be shooting for 50.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It was like a. There was a woman I was I had a relationship with, and it, we were she I was she said, I'm making a decision. I was 60 at that point. I'm making the decision of I will if you want to have a child, I'll stay here. If not, I got a great job and I'm gonna go to I'll end up going to China. And
yeah.
And I went and I said I can't do it. I was 60.
Right.
And the whole thing, but you can have a kid when you're the guy, you can do the. No, that's a selfish fucking act.
And you're still going to be chasing around a kid. You're going to be wheeling around a kid. Yeah, it's not
seven.
A good...
You know, I'm, granted, I got older, but you know, at 60, I'm kind of going, no. I mean, a child is not supposed to watch you grow dead.
And you can always tell when a kid has got an old parent.
Yeah.
You notice that? I just dated a guy for a while who had old parents, and you could tell. I was like, I don't know if you were ever really a child. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like they come out of the womb holding like a spectacles or something. You know what I mean? Like, just because they are born, and then these two old parents are like, all right, let's get to business. What are you going to study?
Yeah.
As opposed to, I mean, my parents were like young carpenters who were like, we're kids also, which I think is good. But yeah, I worry about that. I mean, I don't know. Do you have any regrets about it?
None.
Really? See, that's very good.
For a time during the pandemic because I ran over my life 12,000 times. And, I could have done this. I could have done that. You know, why didn't I have a child with the woman I just talked about? Why didn't, I destroyed this relationship. I destroyed that. I did this. I did that.
Yeah.
I go through all of that. And in the end, it was like, no. And I just got a dog. And
the
I realized.
First one?
No, this is the second.
Yeah.
And the first one I had was really great. And this one is also, I've gotten lucky twice. The first one was really unbelievable. This one is pretty remarkable in its own way. It's really smart. So, but the fact is, I'm dealing with that. That's,
more,
I'm going, that's more than enough.
Yeah.
I mean, now that I'm. Because back when I had the first time, I was in college and, you know, wandering campus and, oh, this is, women will come up and talk to me because I got the fucking dog.
Yeah,
yeah. Whereas before it didn't really work out. But now, but you have the dog but you don't see the dog as a child. Now at my age, you go, fucking, I got to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm coming here. I got to go back. I got to walk the fucker.
Yeah,
you know, all
of
a sudden those. And I like doing it. It's great. And it's really, but I went, I don't know if I could have, I really don't know if I could have done it.
This is for NoCD. NoCD is basically a website that you can go to if you have OCD. If you have OCD or if you have intrusive thoughts, or you think you have OCD or if you have pure OCD, which is just the thoughts and they cycle and they go crazy, or you have OCD where you got to check the stove 1,000 times, you got to do a million little tappy taps in order to get out of the house or else you think you're going to fundamentally change as a person. Or maybe you have thoughts that are like, I'm worried I'm going to hurt somebody. I'm worried I'm going to hurt myself. I don't really feel that way. But what if I do? Who am I? Blah, blah, blah. NoCD can help you with that. It's nocd.com/Jordan Jensen. They will hook you up with a therapist that will help you through exposure therapy. Exposure therapy is the number one way to deal with OCD, in my opinion. What I do is I do a SSRI to help me slow down the metabolic rate of the thoughts, and then I do exposure therapy to make sure that my rituals do not get out of control. Exposure therapy, it's proven to be better than regular talk therapy, because regular talk therapy often can justify, for example, if you're like, I have to check the stove, I have to check the stove, and you go to therapy and the therapist says, what is it about the stove that you have to check? And I go, well, I'm worried about this. You're kind of reinforcing the stove as a character in your life. Stove should not be a character in your life. What exposure therapy does is it helps you go, fuck the stove. I'm walking away from the stove. So if you want to fuck the stove, go to nocd.com/Jordan Jensen. I think about it all. I mean, I have a dog too, and she's like my whole life. And I got up early. I walked her today. I'm going to go back home. I'll take her swimming later so she can be, you know, like, and she's, I'm about to go shoot a movie and she's going to fly with me and she has to get all the paperwork and she goes all over the road with me everywhere.
That's great.
It's the best. But the idea of that being something on the plane that starts crying and that I have, you know what I mean? That, yeah, I have to hook up to my tit at some point is just crazy. Because right now having a dog is like, it's like having a buddy. It's like having a little, yeah, road friend. And it's like a lot of work for sure, but it is very much like a, it stops me from getting lonely on the road. But I think it, say I brought my kid on the road and there was nobody there to help me, I think that would increase the loneliness. I don't think I would look at the baby and be like, it's me and you, buddy. I think I'd be like, I need some help with this thing that, yeah, can't run around on,
yeah,
its own.
Yeah.
But the dog completely changed my touring life. I mean, just like now going to the hotel is like, you know, the dog party and we play and we fuck around and then she goes to the green room and hangs out and meets everybody and does the meet and greet and like, it's the best.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's the best. My sister said, my sister has a similar relationship to dogs that I do where it's like the everything. And she said when she had her daughter, the thought was like, oh, that's what the love is for. Like the way that we love our dogs, she was like, oh, it's for the kid.
Yeah.
And then I think that's what happens is the dog becomes a dog for once.
Yeah.
Whereas right now it's just like my whole, it's like my child. But yeah, the only reason why I think it's interesting to have a kid is because as a woman, your life is dominated by your shitty biology. Like you're just like bleeding, you're PMSing, you're, you know, your whole life is around this like cycle. So it's frustrating for me to go my whole life without utilizing that cycle that's been such a detriment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's like, well, at least I should get something out of it. But the most I get out of it is when I'm PMSing, I rant the best on stage. It's like the best.
Well, I mean, yeah, I do. I do think it's one of those things that will be, is, it's like people would say to me, how do I know I should remain in acting? How do I know I should remain a comic? It's not a question. It yeah, happens. If, yeah, you're going to do it, it's you're gonna do it, and if not, you're gonna go do something else.
And you're not touring right now, right?
I'm not touring anymore. I'm not doing like I was doing, which was like every week, week after week after week.
And how is
named
that?
All
is that
the
like
tours.
A real?
Well, it's good because now I'm just doing one or two shows a month.
That's nice.
You know,
but you're not bored. You're not going crazy.
I got stuff I really want to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I do the Rantcast, and like today, I was, thinking, I'm really trying to figure out a way to be able to go on. I want to write again. I have no, I like performing from time to time. There's a piece I want to write that's basically a stand. I don't write anything, there's a piece I want to write that's kind of like about the time I was in school. And in college at Chapel Hill, because it was a really interesting time. It was the late 60s, and what was going on. And I saw it as a way to talk about all of the things that basically we were doing at that point, people are trying to get rid of now. So it was all the stuff. And,
like human connection kind of stuff?
No, I got, you know, like these guys are coming down, they're, so unions, let's say. So there's a whole group of cafeteria workers were there, like I'm there 6 weeks, and then all of a sudden cafeteria workers go on strike.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
of them. And so all of us kids went, you're fucking right. So we go, of course you're not paying these people, you fucking idiots.
Yeah.
So we go on strike. So that union, boom. You know, they basically tried to strip that for a long time. And then the, you know, the one that really stands out is a guy there. There, there was a fraternity down there coming down the street. I'm standing on the street. I'm watching. There, this is North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and they're these, they're you know, on a number of them are riding horses. Others kind of marching behind them, and they're wearing Confederate uniforms.
Who are those guys?
Those were, it was a fraternity, and they
wow.
And they had a roots in the Confederacy, and we're in North Carolina, which was not that. I mean, Chapel Hill was not like that. And literally, it was like, you could almost hear it. That's not happening again.
Right, I mean, right.
You didn't even have to voice it. It was like, that's gone. Don't even try it again.
Right.
You're finished.
Yeah.
That was wiped out. So it was like one thing after another, after another, after another that we went through that were all kind of these things that now, that, you know, They're looking to diversity, you fucking idiots. Are you kidding me? It's all worked out now. Fuck you.
Yeah. Wait, so you're saying now they've removed any, like now, you're saying now it's become way more politically correct and kind of like fascist?
No, but it's, they've gone, I mean, yeah, you've got a presidency and a goddamn group of idiots.
Yeah.
Who are basically trying to erase what occurred. You know, started, you know, the Voting Rights Act. I mean, all that stuff. Come on, give me a break. Yeah. You kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, you think, oh, you suffering white fuck. What are you, completely stupid?
Wait, but what does that have to do with the Confederate, with the fraternity?
Well, I mean, because it's the same thing. They're bringing them back. They're kind of going, you know, well, we're going to put all the statues back, you know, and we got to have, you know, Robert E. Lee's statue there. And it's all of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They're all like, you know, what's so wrong with those people marching in the University of Virginia saying we will replace you? What's wrong with, you know, when he said some of them are nice people? What planet am I on?
Oh, so you're saying you're noticing a pattern from now to exactly back in the 60s.
Well, I mean, that's what the way in which I think of approaching what's happening now, since when you talk about it on stage, these fucking idiots like, oh, some of them.
Yeah.
You know, the five that stumble in because for reasons that escape me.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch, you know, that what's happening? That, and they start yelling about Trump. It's like, what? You know?
Yeah.
And you kind of go, seriously?
Yeah.
And so, this is a way in which I can talk about, here are the things that occurred when I was a kid.
And what happened in the college when the people dressed like that showed up? Did all the hippie kids freak out, or was it?
No, it was just literally, we stood there, we watched, and it was gone. I mean, literally, you knew that 90%, 95% of the campus went, fuck you, you're not doing, you do that.
Yeah.
You can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, we were just, you know, there was just a rise in the, you know, we're talking about a time, it's 1967, 1966, where they had their first black basketball player.
Right. So you're talking the pendulum swings, so it's just a cyclical thing.
Well, this isn't cyclical. This isn't supposed to be going on.
Yeah.
This is fucking bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no cyclical to this.
You think
this
it's
is madness.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
archaic.
Yeah.
It's fucking antiquity.
Yeah.
God damn it. Don't go back into this madness that we lived through.
But I've met a lot of people who've pulled back from Trump who've been like, this is too crazy. I have a hard time getting the people who are still on board now, after everything, after the insurrection, what is that group of people? Is that just people who need something to believe in, like a religion don't have?
They all get together and say, there'll be five of us who will go see Lewis Black tonight and yell out.
Yeah. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Do they yell out?
Yeah.
What will they say? Just like,
you know, or they won't yell. I'll get a thing. You're a piece of shit. You used to be really funny, and now you made fun. You made fun of him too much. You made fun of him too much.
You've always been doing that.
Yeah, I've made fun of whoever was in office.
Yeah,
this is the first time in the history of all the comedy I've ever done where I'm yelling about somebody in office, and people are, you know, a group of people who, and here's what's odd to me about the guys who kind of follow him. Yeah. Those are the ones who liked me in a sense because I was anti-authoritarian.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't it? And then they're now, this group is complete, you know, and they're now kind of yelling at me because I'm not loving the guy that is the most authoritarian president ever. I mean, you know.
What is that? Is it an idol thing? Is it like a worshiping? Like, it almost feels like it's like a blind faith in something.
Well, he says what I want to say, and I think another strong suit is, you've been put upon. Look at me. Look at how put upon I've been.
Right.
He's always been put upon.
But he's never been put upon.
No, of course not. He's the most, what's the word I was looking for? Fucking, God damn it. He's...
Privileged?
Yeah, but it's privilege when you think you deserve the privilege.
Like an elitism?
Elitism.
Yeah.
You know, there's an...
I think people see that. I think people see the blind elitism, and it's like Nietzsche, when Nietzsche came forward and was like, don't let anybody pull you down, you know, it's survival of the fittest, you rise to the top, be the best you can be, and like, so who cares if you have to be really harsh in how you get there? And Nietzsche, like, every 21-year-old read it and was like, yeah, fuck yeah. And I think Trump does that with retards, where he's like, you know, follow, you know, don't let anybody pull you down. Don't let anybody stop you. And just like, you can rise to the top if you believe it hard enough.
Also, he, you know, facts are like, he has no interest in facts. It's whatever he makes shit up.
Yeah. I mean,
and then you have a whole ecosystem out there that trumpets the shit that he's made up, and also make their own shit up.
Well, yeah, I think at one point he said that Ukraine started the war at one point.
Oh yeah,
and then all of his people were like, "Yeah, they did start the war," and he just like, it's bizarre. He'll just randomly. Also, the tweeting from the White House is the most dystopian thing I've ever. I mean, that is just the bizarre tweets that are coming out of there, like the weird bits.
And that's another thing. Okay, I don't think any of these cocksuckers should be able to tweet.
Yeah,
Democrats,
no way.
Republicans. Okay, you can't do it. I mean, okay, Mamdani won because he was great at social media, yada yada yada. But don't, you know? But Mamdani shows up and talks. Okay,
yeah.
You've got to talk. You can't hide behind, you know, this tweeting. You have to wait. You want to talk to me at 5 o'clock in the morning? Get up.
Yeah.
Put a tape on and fucking speak.
Yeah, and sit there with the desk with the camera.
Rather than this, where it disappears the next day.
Right. It's bizarre.
And that's the other thing that I don't understand, that I never understood about people who got on board with him. It's like, you know, that he would call McCain a loser. You know, he would call these people losers. You don't get to do that.
Yeah.
Not if you're the president. You don't get to do it, okay? And why? Because they're children listening. Okay, I may not have children, but I know what you should do in front of children, and you present an example. And you're the president, and it's called tough shit. Part of your job is being an example. Okay?
Right, totally. Is being the example, like capital T. It's like the,
yeah.
You are supposed to be the example of like, of cohesion. Like it doesn't, it's, I mean, Obama did a really good job with that. And it was really, I mean, I got really disillusioned when Bernie lost. That definitely fucked me up a little bit, just because I felt like I watched like the New York Times and all these publications and stuff
But it wasn't that. It was also the fact that the Democratic Party was a piece of shit. They basically, they cockblocked him from the presidency.
Yeah, totally.
They did. It's not her. She wasn't supposed to win this. They didn't give him any fair chance.
I saw her the other day. I went to a lecture and she was sitting right behind me.
Ooh, Hill?
Yeah.
Yeah?
She's so tiny.
She's small.
She's a tiny little lady.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I thought she was going to be tall for some reason, but I could have chucked her.
But she was really good as a senator. I thought she was good at what she does. But I'm sorry, you're running for office. And we a whole bunch of people wanted Bernie.
I think it all became incoherent to a very undereducated society. Like, I think social media hit and people only were able to read 5 words at a time. And I think that instead of having any sort of like research capacity, people were just like motivated by rage. And I think Trump showed up and he was able to speak 5 words at a time. You know, he was able to be like, get these people out of the country. And people were like, yes, that I can understand. And I think it's just like a lack of literacy in general. I think it just declined so rapidly because of social media.
Well, it's this.
Yeah,
it's,
totally.
It's the totally phone.
That. I mean, even the ChatGPT thing, like, I'll use that to look up information, and I'll go down like a wormhole where I'll be like, teach me string theory or something, when I first got ChatGPT, and by the next morning, it was completely gone. Because the way that it feeds you information, you don't have to do any discerning. You don't have to like follow any rabbit hole down. It just feeds it to you in these like flashcards. It's like when you were a kid and you were trying to study,
yeah,
and you couldn't retain information because you weren't reading the literature, and you're like, well, I have the flashcards, and it didn't work. But yeah, I think it's definitely spooky. I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, I think you could ask ChatGPT if you should establish a relationship, if you should have children.
Yeah.
And you can give it all the information.
Yeah, he'll tell me.
And the ups and the downs and the whys and the why nots. And I think that, you know, and it will digest it.
It will. Yeah, it'll digest it. It'll weigh the pros and cons.
Yeah.
It has an intimate experience.
It'll put sperm in the male.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're going to get to that point. That's what's going to happen, is women are going to get sperm in the male so they don't have to fraternize with men at all, and they're going to inject babies into them.
Well, that chat, you know, the people having relationships, another, but that's also, I think, a product of our of the pandemic. This last 10 years since, you know, it's from Obama till through now, it will be written about. Somebody is going to write a remarkable book on it.
It almost feels like the WWE took over politics.
Yeah.
It's very weird. It's very performative and very, very odd.
But also, the Democrats respond to that stuff, and now they're using that language. And I'm kind of going, that's my job, you fucking asshole.
Yeah,
that's
totally
my job. That's what I did. That's how I established my career. I had people coming up to me and saying, Do you mind leaving a message for my brother and tell him to go fuck himself?
Yeah.
I mean, that was what I did. I would say every time I walked into an airport, it was like, I want to take a picture. Would you give me the finger? I mean, it's like, and that's what I do.
And you think, and the Democrats are saying you're doing that now?
They're using that more. They're using the same language. They're using language. They're using profanity.
Yeah. Are the Democrats?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Who is it?
I can't. Hakeem Jeffries said something. I mean, you can, if you got.
Oh, they're falling prey to the Trump.
Well, way. They are. They're coming back with, you know, not the fuck you, but, you know, this is bullshit. This is, you know.
Oh, that's so interesting. That is a weird thing about Trump, where he is doing our job.
He is doing our
just
job.
By being...
And that, you know, and that. He's got such a great sense of humor that he really doesn't know when something's funny.
Yeah.
And he's not funny.
Yeah. Right.
They say he's funny. I think he's got a sense of timing. You know, when he's
on accident. I think it's by accident.
Yeah, I think it's but it's there. He's got a sense of da 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 boom.
So in all of your time doing stand-up, this is the first epoch where people have stood up at your shows and said shit? That could be crowd work stuff, though. That could be my fault.
It's them. It really is them.
They get so activated by
they
it?
They get. I mean, if I go through my, used to be, what was used to be Twitter, you know, there would be, you know, you don't. You really, you know, you. Well, the last show I did, which they said it was in Minneapolis of all places, and they said, you know, you really went after Trump much more than you did the Dem. I mean, you used to be an equal opportunity, and I'm kind of going, and I'm thinking back, I'm thinking, wow, you know, I didn't do that much on Trump. I said a couple of things that were really, you know, harder. I hit him much harder than I would before.
Yeah.
Because enough's enough. I don't tolerate it anymore.
Yeah.
There's nothing to discuss.
Yeah.
Bombing Iran. The whole thing with ICE is like the Gestapo. I mean, come on, guys.
It's so crazy. The ICE thing was so dystopian. That was so fucking weird.
Yeah, and I'm going to take the Gestapo word back, because then people. But I will say that it is thug is the word. He's sending thugs out.
Yeah.
And it's happening in Jersey this week.
ISIS?
Yeah, these guys showed up. You know, the Senate. I haven't watched the whole thing, so I'm just giving fragments of what I was. I'm walking back and forth, you know, getting ready to come here and there, because it's been over the weekend. One of the Senate congressmen went down there. The governor went down there, and they've started macing people and doing, you know, tear gassing. And
is it the big fat guys with the masks on, that same breed of people?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, no, it's ICE. Oh. They have a detention center, and it's supposed to be horrifying inside. And they're saying we're going in, and they're saying they're not letting the state and the federal, you know, the ones who are elected, and the state officials go into this property, which they are supposed to have access to.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
And Trump was just like, lock it down. Only the ICE agents are able to go in there.
Well, I mean, who knows? You know, it's that one that he put in charge. I mean, it's not the way, you know. It's like what they did out in Minneapolis. They, you know, oh, that isn't what happened. You know, he did this. And I'm going, wait a minute, the guy who was a medical guy.
And that we all watched on camera. We watched exactly what happened on
camera. Yeah, and that's the other thing. It's what you don't trust what you see anymore. That was the way, you know, you're stepping over into boundaries that I won't tolerate.
Right. Just the complete manipulation of people's reality it's very bizarre.
So, and then you wonder why, you know, am I going to have kids or not?
Yeah.
You know, here's one reason. Yeah. You want to sit there and explain. I mean, when I have friends who have had kids, I can't imagine, you know, what it'd be like to have a young kid now and have to explain to them what the fuck's going on.
Factor are meals built around your goals, whether that's weight loss, overall nutrition, more protein, GLP-1 support for strength, workout recovery. Check out Factor's Muscle Pro collection. For me, eating healthy isn't a willpower problem, it's a setup problem, until I found Factor. With Factor, I'm hitting my nutritional goals this season without the planning, grocery runs, or cooking. I keep Factor meals in my freezer. I like to eat food fresh off of the shelf, but oftentimes I do not have that. I have just gotten home off of the road. I don't have time to go to the grocery store, so I pull out a Factor meal. I nuke it. I put it in the microwave for a couple minutes. Comes out great, tastes good, and it's all made with whole ingredients. So you know you're getting the nutrition that you want. You can also count your macros that way. I even have had it like when friends come over, I throw it in a thing and I say that I made dinner because it kind of looks like you made dinner. It's ready in 2 minutes. It preps, cooks, and delivers straight to your door, so you have more time for everything you want to do this summer. There's 70 add-ons to round out your nutrition. There's salad. There's elote. There's miso. There's edamame. They have every meal is handcrafted functional ingredients, lean proteins, colorful veggies, whole foods, and healthy fats. Factor bans 175 ingredients, no artificial colors or sweeteners, no high fructose corn syrup, no refined seed oils, just nutrient dense food. Head to factormeals.com/RIP Jordan 50 off and use code RIPJordan50 off to get 50% off and free daily greens per box. That's RIPJORDAN50OFF. With new subscriptions only, get free daily greens per box with new subscriptions only while supplies last until 9/27/2026. See website for more details. Okay, Real Bricks. Real Bricks is a fractional real estate investing platform built for people who want to invest in real estate without buying an entire home. Here's what makes it different from buying anything else out there. Debt-free rental properties, no mortgage. That is genuinely rare in this space. We do this by fully funding the purchase price for these homes through Real Bricks investors. Carefully selected locations, choosing to give investors exposure to markets that have strong economic indicators, quarterly dividend yields that are based on the rental income produced by the property, app available on Android, Apple, and desktop, simple to use, easy to track. Minimum investment is $100. Users can own up to 9.8% of each property offering. Most people think that real estate investing means buying a whole house. Real Bricks makes it easy to invest in a pace that works for you. Starting as little as $100, you can build your real estate portfolio one brick at a time. The new construction homes on this platform have been acquired below market listing pricing, so there's potential to appreciation built in once all the shares of the property are sold to investors. All locations and properties are vetted by local economic factors and details on specific properties by the Real Bricks team. Potential dividend distributions delivered quarterly. Returns not guaranteed. Download the app, see what's available, and start investing brick by brick. Use your referral code Jordan50, JORDAN50, during sign up to get $50 in shares on your reinvestment. Link is also found in the description below. Yeah, but I remember being a little kid. I remember the Bush and Gore. Like, I remember all that stuff, and I remember it being complicated for the adults, but there is something amazing about kids where they just are thinking about what's right in front of them. They're not thinking about the macro. Like, I remember my mom just sobbing because I remember they said Gore won, and then they're like, actually, it's Bush. And then I remember I have like three lesbian moms, and they were all sad, or it was two of them at the time, and they were like crying, and I remember being like, having no idea what's going on. September 11th was weird, but it is. I do think if I sat down with my niece and tried to explain Trump, she would be like, I don't fucking care. It doesn't matter to me. So I think no matter what, kids prevail, but the social media thing scares the shit out of me with kids, definitely.
And I'll tell you what else. I mean, I have a friend, a kind of a hot shit professor, and one of the ones that comes on TV, I was talking to him the other day, and it was, you know, just how staggering it is in terms of the horror, the potential horror, and already the horror, and you gave a bit of it, of AI.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not only jobs, it's also what it is capable of, and they didn't put the brakes. Okay, they started with the internet. They didn't put the brakes on the internet, okay? Yeah. The internet was essentially television again.
Yes.
Okay, that's what it was with words and videos and the whole thing. But so when radio went to television, television was, you know, the FCC was in charge. The FCC should have been in charge of the internet.
Yeah.
Some group should have been in charge of the internet. And then the internet spawned the rest of this crap, and, you know, Facebook comes along. I'm sorry, that's why you have the FCC should go, nope. But you're calling yourself media, you fuckheads.
Yeah. So what is that? Why isn't the FCC involved at all?
I don't know. Because Congress didn't step in. This was all way beyond them, because the people who were in there already were too old to be dealing with what was coming down the pike.
And the corporations were too big. They had too much money. They had too much.
Well, I mean, you know, they were all, you know, he was already, you know, printing money, Zuckerberg.
It's so weird when you watch Zuckerberg communicate with another person, like on an interview or something, and you're like, this is exactly the person who would create this, is somebody who has no capacity to have any sort of like human exchange. It's so freaky. It's really weird. I am curious what the younger generations will do. Like, I wonder if it'll become hacky to have Instagram and if they'll get off of it. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if it'll swing back where the phones will become kind of cringy to them.
Well, I just don't understand, and that's part of the thing. I get why I'm supposed to use it. I get why comics use it. I get why actors, I get why people in entertainment use it. I do not know, and I get why some people creatively use it to get, you know, be able to, you know, they work all day and then they come back and, you know, they have their dog talking and stuff, and it's really great. And I get that. But the rest of it, I don't get I don't get it.
Yeah, I've always had this problem. I use it because, you know, I do, like, I'll do my hour and I'll do a lot of, I'll do crowd work within it to get into jokes. And I really like talking to the audience. And I always have with stand-up, like, it's helped me, like, not dissociate. And then at some point during the pandemic or after the pandemic, I taught myself Adobe and I was like, oh, all of this crowd work stuff I can just put on the internet. And then that helped me sell tickets, da da da. But when I, like, date a guy who, like, isn't in the industry and he has Instagram, I do not. I'm like, why would you ever be on this if it wasn't directly leading to monetary like, what is the point when they're posting things of like their most recent trip? I'm like, who's seeing this? Your two aunts? This is, send them the photos directly. Yeah. Why are you on this? It's really weird. I would not want to be on it at all if I wasn't a comic.
Yeah.
But it has helped me so much. But I definitely
But it is what it's, you know,
yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah. It's a tool.
It's an advertisement.
Yes, it's an advertisement.
I had The Daily Show.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Which was part of the reason I never really got fully into it, because I had The Daily Show. So, once every 3 weeks, I was coming out with a huge ad for myself.
Right, right. And then The Daily Show, how long would you work on those monologues?
I didn't.
You did?
I worked on it when I went in, because they chose what it was I was going to talk about.
Really?
Yeah.
They did? Like, they chose the topic?
Yeah.
And then, was there any topic that they were like, you can't do this?
No, I mean, they didn't, they just chose the topic.
Wow. And you
but
just
I started, but I wrote my own. When I started, I improv-ed. I mean, I was brought on because I had a ton of material and I could also sit there and do it.
Yeah.
And there was no audience, and I would improv, and then I would improv again, and then I'd improv again. And they would go, change this, do that, keep the last line. That's a really great opening, and let's do it again. So three or four times, and I'd have it in the can. And then they brought in an audience, and I started writing it, putting it on teleprompter, and working with Hank Gallo as the producer. And so I wrote it out, then edit, da-da-da-da, and then we'd throw it up on the thing and rework it a little and did it in front of an audience.
Yeah.
So then it became, there was an excess amount of videos that were out there, like, squirrels water skiing and monkeys throwing poop and whatever the fuck else. And that was all free at one point. And so you could grab this stuff and that, and I had... I said I wanted to do, something else with the segment, and what I really wanted to do was news.
Yeah.
What I really wanted was on Fridays to take, which never went. Nobody listened to me, so it was like take everything. They threw away a profound amount of really good jokes. The writers on that show were really extraordinary.
Really?
Yeah, from the very beginning, they've always been good. Nobody shows up there. It's like if you go to certain drama schools, nobody really applies unless they're, pretty good.
So you wanted to take some of those jokes or those headlines and work them
I wanted to just take what they wanted to do, what those guys wanted and what the jokes I thought, and put it together in a 15-minute segment.
Yeah.
Even if it was on the internet. And so I talked to them, and then they came up with this. Well, we got all this stuff, and what we're going to do is, so then they dumped all these videos on me, which was fun, and it was fine. And I worked with a couple of writers, a writer and a couple of producers, and we'd work on it. And I would watch them and then write stuff, and then they would write stuff, and we'd kick it back and forth. And then that became it for a while. And then it became, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about this, and we're going to talk about this. And then, and that was when John really kind of wanted a show to be, have an arc. So... I was there in part, I think, if it was a bleak episode, I'd come in and, go honk, honk, quack, quack. And
right, 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 right.
Big barking dog, and then we, and so, and I didn't, and then there was a, and so that went well for a while until they had these two producers who he had hired, who didn't think I was funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They didn't know what I was there, because I'm totally a wild card, because everybody's a correspondent except me.
Right.
I'm not a correspondent.
But John's not a correspondent.
No, but he's the host.
Yeah.
So there's the host, but the rest of them are all correspondents.
Yeah.
In my position. So
then they got rid of you?
No, they tried to. There was a debate about it. I did not know this until I read the book. There was a Daily Show book that was kind of the oral history.
And then you read about your almost demise in a book? That's crazy.
Well, I kind of knew things were fucked up because Rory Albanese was my producer. There was Hank Gallo was a great producer. Rory was a great producer of mine. And Rory became one of the exec producers later on. But there was a Valentine's Day thing we're doing. I take Rory on the road with me because he was an up-and-coming comic, and just to, I threw him into the stress factory.
Okay.
So I said, this is what you're going to have to deal with. And they'd be bellowing at him, go fuck yourself.
Oh, hell yeah.
It was great. And I would laugh.
Yeah.
And it was, and he, but he had, knew my material. And so we had this Valentine's Day thing, and I had two of the lines from mine that I put in there.
Yeah.
And that, they said, these aren't funny. And Rory said, you know, I just worked with them all weekend. People are howling at
yeah.
this. Oh, no, we can write better than that. So that was the first thing. They never got, and this is the truth of my comedy in many ways, is attitude. So my right. comedy is a third, if not half.
Yeah.
I use attitude until I can find a punchline.
Yeah, so, yeah, same. So 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so that was the way I worked. And
if you read my whole set, you'd be like, what? Where is the possible punchline in this? Yeah. But it is that I'm screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would have this half a thing. You know, I would kind of go, we've got this, they would go, this isn't funny. That was also them would be. And the guys would, this is Rory and some of the other writers writing this.
Yeah.
And then they'd say, but that's not funny. It's not a punchline.
Who are these guys? Just producers?
There were two producers.
Not comics at all?
Oh, no. They were, you know, they wrote comedy. But, you know, they'd been involved in comedy. But they had no, they did not like me. And I was a wild card.
Yeah.
And they couldn't control me in a sense. So, and then they were gone. And then it went back to being, you know, fun. But I literally had to sit down with my shrink and go, you know, and it was pretty quick. I spent like 2 weeks going, boy, I wonder if I quit.
Yeah.
Normally, really? I would quit. Normally, yeah. In 90% of my life would have been, fuck you, I'm not putting up with your shit. But it was kind of like, so let me get this straight. And then they started writing this stuff because I just opted it out. And then I realized, wow, you're going to pay me just to come in and perform as me, and you haven't written me well. So what would be really great for me as a performer is to learn how to perform me when it's not really written in my language or my style.
Right. So you took it as like a practice.
I took it as an acting lesson.
Yeah. That's very...
How to act like me.
Right. How to act like Lewis Black, not reading Lewis Black. Yeah. That's so interesting.
And then it really... And then as of late, it's been great. I mean, it has really been... I've got a lot more freedom, and they will allow me to turn to the audience, and they will allow me to do things I've never been able to do in the whole time I've been there.
Interesting. I wonder why it was just that brief moment of just they brought on two guys.
I wouldn't need to ask John, but I think it was John's way of getting so that he didn't have to deal with a bunch of shit.
Right.
They, you know, so they were like, we'll get this, you know.
Right.
But we'll clear this up. So but it really was a long time until I really was given the, you know, kind of felt comfortable participating. I always kind of tried to I kind of always had a punchline here, a punchline there. But I mean, what they did cut out for me was the, kind of learning how to write in that style. I never learned how to write punchlines. Now I'm actually gotten better at it because they've given me a certain amount of freedom.
Right.
And they actually turned to me and asked what I think.
Yeah. Wow. So it didn't seem like it at all. It never looked like you were going through a phase of having to shoehorn your way in at all.
Yeah.
That's
good.
That is good. So now they've given you more leeway, more freedom.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not just more freedom. They're really good. They get they like writing it. From the beginning, the guys have always liked writing it because it's really like something you get. It's,
yeah.
You know.
So then in your stand-up, did it help your stand-up to have punchline?
No.
Training? No.
No.
You just rant?
Yeah.
And then did you switch to politics at all? Was there a chapter in The Daily Show where you were like, I'm just ranting about politics now?
No, because I'm still never really ranting about politics.
Yeah.
It's about, like, last week was maxing. You know.
Maxing is what again?
It's when you, you know, like, go as far as you can. I can't even think of it. There was a guy named Clavicular.
Oh, yeah. Looks maxing.
Yeah, that's it, looks maxing. because there was a whole bunch, you know, a woman saying, you should look it up. It was pretty, I was very proud of this. This one was one of the funniest ones I've done.
Really?
From the beginning. I mean, it's unbelievable.
That's so cool.
You know, that,
that
it, they
that
really,
it gets better.
Well, they nailed it. I mean, because they really, basically the head writer on, that writes the segment with two other writers, they all get my boys.
Yeah.
He worked with Conan for a long time, so he really gets it. And he really gets my boys, they all get my boys completely. So it really makes...
It must be so cool to watch your career press on and then the people that originally, like, these people are starting out, you're starting out, they don't know who you are, you're finding your way, and then you've been working so long that now you're like an example of how to write for these people who are writing for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's kind of neat.
It was neat.
That's really cool to like watch yourself go from, yeah, that's very cool. And so now they know how to write in your voice because you've been.
And I always thought, really, I thought for when I would go out to do these, and I had a couple of them, you know, a couple of pilots that I was on. But I always thought, how tough is this?
Yeah.
To write for me. And it's, I'm like, four notes, you fucking idiots.
Yeah.
You know, how tough is this? Because it was at the time, you know, they were looking for, we're going to look for, really looking to get a, you know, we want comics to do pilots. So Ray Romano.
Right.
And a whole group of others, you know.
Yeah.
Ended up kind of coming through the door on that. And I thought, you know, hey, hello.
Yeah.
But it was fine. It worked out fine. But it
what
was...
is that? So when you would go for pilot season, you would show up for auditions for different, like, would you pitch your pilot? Did you have a pilot that you'd pitch around?
No, I was always involved with a couple of writers who had a, you know, who would pitch stuff. And so I would just go in and audition.
What is that? What do you mean audition for something that doesn't exist yet?
Oh, no. It would be like, you know, they were doing 20 new pilots and, you know, the grouchy next door neighbor.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Interesting. And is there still pilot season? Do people still do that?
No, it's
we
constant.
Pick you to come in. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's.
I just pitched a TV show and it was so interesting because you're sitting in a room with people that are like very buttoned up and they have a suburban house and kids and you're like talking about, you know, blood and sex and gut, you know, it was like very, and they're almost like witnessing you like a external creature kind of thing.
Yeah, you know.
And they're like, yeah, we like this. And I'm like, do you even know what I'm, how are we even on the same, you know what I mean? Like comedians, or I was there for Netflix as a joke and it was like, the disparity between the industry and the comics was so huge. Like, it's all of us walking around like cartoon characters eating all the free food that we can. And then industry that's like drinking martinis and they're super liquored up and they're coming up to you and being like talking about brand deals and stuff. And all of us were like, dude, we don't even know how to do taxes. Like, we're just like children. And it's such a weird business because comics are not poised or composed or like, you know, like whatever dimension we're in is the one we kind of have to stay in. We can't really pivot into a different realm. We can't like become a different person. So it's really weird the further I get along in this industry where it's like people kind of being like, do you think you can be this way? Like, do you think you can become this person so that we can pay you? And I'm like, there's no way I can't.
Well, it's partly, you have to realize the other thing that I thought was interesting, which I think you're experiencing, is that it was easier to learn stand-up than it is to learn the business of stand-up.
Yes. The business of stand-up is so bizarre to me. It's really, really crazy. And I didn't know, and all of the show stuff that I'm dealing with now is so, it's so different than what I'm used to. And yeah, I mean, I thought once I dialed in stand-up, that was like, okay, you got it. And then it became the road. And dialing in the road, and that's like a whole new trade. Yeah. That's like learning.
And you're in a different universe than I was, because the improvs are gone, and they're now what are they? Heliums.
Yep. And you did the road most weekends.
Oh yeah.
And did you?
From I switched from theater to stand up when I was 40 is when I started doing it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. And How did you switch? What got you to do the?
Because I'd been doing stand-up kind of on the side, but I wasn't really that interested. I mean, it was like, I'm not going to be doing this. And then I started to go over to Catch and do some of the clubs here, and then it got more and more and more, and I was doing it more, and I was more comfortable with it. And then, so I started almost as, and I was doing intros to everything. We had this room here where I would do intros to every show. It was all theater. A lot of it was theater.
Oh,
and
like,
I introduce every fucking thing we did.
Oh, in a funny way.
Yeah, and because I was essentially, that's where I learned how to MC. So I was MCing there, but I was then, I was doing shows for free for a long time, where I would just get people together and I'd have a whole bunch of pieces of paper that I wrote on.
Yeah.
And talk about stuff and do it for free. I didn't give a shit, just because I wanted to work on stuff. And then kind of I developed some things in this room, and those became the bits. And then it was really, I kind of went, I just really said, I've got to go, I'm going to have to go do this, because it's the only way I'm going to make a living. I'm
right.
40 and I'm
and theater wasn't making you any money.
Well, playwriting is, you might as well be a jazz poet.
It's, really?
Yeah, it's not a moneymaker, unless you use that to work also on, but I didn't want to write for television.
Right. So you would write a script, and then you would, do you have to pitch that?
No, you send it out to theaters.
You send it out to theaters.
Yeah.
You casted it.
No, the theater would, or you with the theater, and you with their director. It was mostly their director.
Okay, their director, their cast.
Yeah.
And you were in it.
No, I wrote.
Just wrote.
Yeah.
And you would walk on stage in the beginning.
No. When I was when I ran a room here.
Yeah.
I would walk on stage.
And, oh, okay.
I was doing plays by tons of other people.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then you switched to stand up, and so you must have blown up quickly.
No, I didn't, because it was a long time until it was a big blow up.
Really?
Yeah.
Like 10 years?
Easily 10.
Really?
Yeah.
So then you started doing stand up. Did you ever work like The Cellar or anything?
I worked The Cellar early on.
Yeah.
And, but The Cellar was the just really the room downstairs.
Yeah.
And it was that kind of oddly shaped squash court.
Yeah.
And I'm standing here, and the back is 20 feet away, and I'm screaming like a lunatic.
Yep.
And I went, I can't do this.
You need a bigger room.
Or just let me do it the other way. You know, I should be at this end of the room.
Oh, yeah.
Going.
Yelling the long way.
Because this
totally.
Is, you know, I know acoustics. I mean, this is like too much. So, and I had no modulation at that point. So I would work, but I would work other clubs and stuff.
Yeah, I yell at The Cellar a lot, and there's a mirror directly across, so I'm just screaming at my own reflection so often. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Did you have the thing? I have this thing where, like, how do I explain this? Like, because most of my stand-up is also ranting, when you were off stage, did you have the, like, sometimes I feel like when I'm off stage, everything's going into the filter of how I can make it bad. Does
make
that make
it,
sense?
Make it
bad. Make it offensive to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I almost sometimes have to be like, I have to turn the rant brain off and be like, it's actually okay that person's dog is untrained. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because everything is coming into this filter of how can I scream about this?
Yeah.
Did you ever have that? Like,
no.
In relationships at all?
No, because basically it was, there were certain things that got me angry.
Yeah.
And that was my hook. So
the
if something
things.
Pissed me off, I would start with that and go. So it was a filter that was already there.
Okay, gotcha.
So I had to be angry about it. I couldn't, you know, I searching for it, it never was like.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And then I just find that I'll get angry about, like, I was in a relationship with a guy recently. We broke up, but he would be like, you have the stand-up brain where you just get mad about things. Because that's your lens that you need to make money. And I was like, I don't know if that actually is true. I think it's pissing me the fuck off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I, Yeah, but I do wonder if that is a thing where it's like the way that, like, I think in black and white a lot. Like, if one of my friends is like, I masturbate every day, I'm like, that's too much for a woman. You don't have testicles. That doesn't make sense. And they're like, well, it's my life. And I'm like, yeah, but it's biologically unsound and you're a monster. And they're like, that's so black and white. But I'm like, that is how I think, where it's like the value judgment. And I don't know if that's from stand up. I think I might have always been that way. And then stand up was the thing that allowed me to say it out loud.
Yeah.
But
it probably was, because that's the way you're funny.
Yeah. It's hard for me to see any, like, if I think something, I hammer down on it so hard. And it's so interesting because off stage, I get in these dilemmas with people where I'm like, I need to understand what you're thinking because you're acting so bad, right? And I'm like hammering it down. I'm like, just describe it. And the only place where I have freedom to do that is on stage, where it's like, I can just keep, you know what I mean? I can just beat the board until it's splintering everywhere and it's fine. It is the best. But yeah, it does. I do have to, I think it's hard as a woman too, because then you get off stage and you're like, oh shit, now there's an expectation that I become this like soft person, and it just like doesn't happen. It's crazy.
I become a soft person.
You become a soft person? That's good.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what I am. I mean, it's weird because as I'm walking off stage, it's always like, Who was that guy?
Yeah, totally. Oh, that's cool.
You know,
I do like that. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I just feel like maybe that's with time. Did you have that when you first started?
No, I didn't. I was lucky to know what was going on. I got a laugh. Oh, that's
yeah, totally. Okay, so the thing that you're plugging is Rantcast.
My Rantcast, which is you can get it where all you get your rant stuff, and go to lewisblack.com, which will tell you where to send the rant into. Write about anything. You know, it doesn't have to be political. I don't give a fuck. Write about what's pissing you off. What I found really interesting was, and part of the reason I started doing it was like, you know, people getting fucked over in terms of health insurance, or it's service people getting fucked over, and you know, real life stories as opposed to, you know, one of these schmuck politicians. You know, I wanted people to really tell their stories, not some politician say, I met him. Fuck you, you met him, and he came up with it. No, I want them to tell it. So, you know, whatever it is, you know, there are people who get angry about going to Walmarts. I mean, you know, there's just levels of stuff. It doesn't have to be about your next door neighbor.
It's the amount of hydrants on the streets.
Yeah.
So many.
So
insane amount of hydrants.
So that's easy. And it comes out weekly. And then I'm at June 13th. I'm at the Mid-Atlantic City at the Borgata.
Awesome. Fun. Very cool. All right. And I just announced a bunch of tour dates on, you know, my website, punchup.live/Jordan Jensen. Thanks. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah.